hold of me. I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. There's some phrases I think that the more you say it, the better it gets, the more that it means. We can't pass over this one or let it race too quickly through us. Let it sink in for a moment. I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. I press on. I don't stop. I don't quit. I don't give up. And sometimes things are hard. And sometimes things are frustrating. And sometimes things feel like they're all stacked up against me. They're all in my way, or I'm in my own way, but I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to quit. I am not going to give up. I am going to press on. Press on. Push through. Press on. And I desire to take hold, to grab that which has been promised to me, that which has been offered to me, this heavenly reward, this fellowship with God. I want to press on, I want to push on, and I want to take hold of it. But that which I want to hold on to, Jesus has already won. And because he has won it for me, he is holding on to me. He's not holding me back or holding me down. He is holding on to me so that as I press and as I push, I'm going to slip and I'm going to fall and I'm going to fail, and he's going to pick me up. He's going to lift me up and he's going to hold on to me, and I will not get swept away. I will not get pushed down with an inability to get back up. Jesus himself has claimed the prize. Jesus himself has won the honor. And though I press and though I push, he's holding on to me. And I am never alone. And I am never without him. And I am never without hope. It's hard when it's easy. When it's good, when it's bad. When it's frustrating. When it's filled with suffering. When it's filled with anxiety. Or I just don't understand it. Or I can't do it anymore. He is holding on to you. He is holding on to us. And I think that's a phrase that we can say again and again and again. And the more we say it, the more it means. The better it gets. So press on. Press on. Push through. Don't stop. Don't quit. Press on. Jesus is holding on to you. Now we move through this Exodus story from the deliverance of Israel, and you know they're slaves, and they're in bondage, and God frees them, and it's miraculous and it's amazing. And we've had weeks now where time after time after time after time, God has done the amazing on their behalf to demonstrate and to prove his own faithfulness and how they are his people. And whether it's, you know, the manna that shows up every day so they have enough food, or the quail, or the water from the rocks, or the fact that they just keep whining and complaining and he doesn't squish them like bugs. All of those add up together to show this enduring and powerful and profound relationship, what it means to be God's people. And now it goes to a different level with the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments, they mark Israel as being God's own. They mark Israel as being part of God's family. Because I think we've probably all done this. Your parents said it, or maybe you said it to your own kids. Well, as long as you live under my roof, this is how we're going to do it. I don't care what all the other families do. You're part of my family, not part of their family. And in this family, I don't know, whatever. But there's something about every family that says, I don't care what your friends do or how late their parents allow them to stay up. or what flavor of ice cream they get every night for dinner. By golly, in this household and with my family, we are going to blah, blah, blah. And these rules, these standards, this is how we do it in my family. This is how we do it under my roof. That marks your family, that marks your children, and they are different than any other family because, by golly, they're yours. And these rules, even if they feel arbitrary or even if they feel onerous or whatever, they're actually a gift to your children and to the rest of your family because they're, frankly, a gift to everyone else as well. When you are under the rules of a household, you know that your parents care. Parents that do not give a darn do not set rules and boundaries. And we know that. Frankly, we see the results of it like every day. How much insanity within society would be different if people had someone in authority, parents or really anyone, who said, no, stop it. Don't do that. I don't care if the other person does it. You shouldn't. As long as you live under my... whatever it takes to be able to set those boundaries, to set those standards, to set those rules, it sets that family apart. It marks those kids to say, I have parents who care enough about me to say no. Because no is kind of hard. And if they didn't care, they would take the easy way out. They would take the cheap way out and say, whatever. But that's indifference, or it's ignorance, or it's something else. It's not actual love. And love says, even when it's awkward or hard or difficult, no. We do this, and we don't do that. And I don't care what the other families say. Because you're part of my family. This is my family. And we belong together. These are our rules. These are our standards. It is a gift. The law is a gift. The Torah, the Ten Commandments, these are a gift. Through them, Israel is marked as God's own. He says, well, as long as you live under my roof, basically, as long as you are part of the family of God, well, this is the way that we operate. The things we do and the things that we don't do. I don't care what all the... I want to be like the Phoenicians. And the Phoenicians, Mom, I mean, they let them stay up. I don't care what the Phoenicians do. This is a way for God to say, I care enough about you to set these boundaries and to set these standards. And these will be a blessing to you. These will be a blessing to others. That's what I just told the kids a little while ago. Even the kids know that, you know, society's crazy. Messed up, and there's stuff that happens that shouldn't happen. And we start pointing down the Ten Commandments, and we say, what would happen if people actually did this? You know, what would happen? What would society look like if we didn't murder, didn't steal, didn't lie? We didn't want to take something that belonged to someone else. I mean, can you imagine the profound change in culture and society from top to bottom? These are not burdens to us. These are blessings, and this is a gift. God says, you follow these, and you are part of the family. And we can look at them, and we can see that the first set, the first half, these are very vertical commandments, our relationship with God. You know, there is one, only one God, and no idols, and don't take your name in vain, and the Sabbath, and all that. And this is our relationship, you know, vertically from heaven downward and us upward, and then the second half, those others, then this is a more horizontal thing. This is the face-to-face, eye-to-eye. This is how we treat each other. How we treat God with honor and respect, how we treat one another with honor and respect. So we take this vertical element, and we take this horizontal element, and then combine the Ten Commandments, take this kind of holistic picture of our entire life. Inside and out. They take a holistic picture of all of society. Inside and out. This is what it means, and this is what it should look like to be a part of the family of God and to live under His roof. He cares enough to set those boundaries, to set those standards, and to set those rules. Well, what happens when following the rules, even following very carefully, is not enough? And this is Paul's point to the Philippians there in chapter 3. If there is anyone who ought to be able to raise their hand and to say, as a point of pride, I've done it all, I'm the man, then it's Paul. He starts off this passage by kind of relating his resume. And it's awesome. I mean, Paul is the man. I was circumcised on the eighth day. I am of the people of Israel, the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews. In regards to the law, I was a Pharisee. In regards to zeal, I persecuted the church. In regards to righteousness, I fulfilled the law and every little bit of it. I am totally the man in this, and if anyone can stand up with some pride, it's me, and you know what? I drop it like a rock. Because all those things that I could act like I am proud of, they are nothing. Because they're not enough. Where I come from, and my family, and my heritage, and all the ways that I have tried to do the right thing, ultimately, and in relation to God's gracious love for me, it's just a whole lot of nothing. It's not worth it. And I drop it. It's like a chunk. When I think of the all-surpassing grace of Christ, the fact that I'm a part of the tribe of Benjamin, who cares anymore? The fact when I look at Jesus and I know that the law has been fulfilled in Him, through Him, in ways that I just can't do, then the fact that I was a Pharisee, it just doesn't matter anymore. Who cares? He says, I'll tell you what I care about. I care about Christ. And I care that He is holding on to me. And I care about not what's happened in the past. I care about pressing on. I care about pushing forward. I care about growing closer to Him and looking more like Him and acting more like Him because the law has been fulfilled through Him and through His righteousness, not mine. So we talked a couple of weeks ago. We had some passages that were pointing to grace, and we kind of talked about a theological understanding of grace, and I gave you the catechetical definition of grace, of unmerited favor. So it's God's love, it's His care, it's His compassion, His favor towards those who do not merit it, those who do not deserve it, those who cannot command it. He doesn't owe it to us, He gives it to us. So that's grace. You know, we can't say, well, this is because God owes me, because I've screwed it up. I've flopped and I've failed. Whether it's trying to follow the Ten Commandments or anything else, no matter how hard we try, at some point, we mess it up. No matter how hard we try to do good, at some point, we fail. And those times where, frankly, we try to do bad, we succeed spectacularly. Small ways and in large ways, but against an almighty and all righteous and all holy God, we fall short. Every single one of us. If even Paul says it's not worth it, we don't measure up to the standard of Paul, let alone the standard of Jesus. So what are we going to do? This is where the unmerited favor of grace meets the concept of holiness and righteousness, for it will be the righteousness of God Himself which He will grant to us out of gracious love, and not our own. I'm not righteous enough. I can't build that tower high enough. I can't make it big enough or strong enough. I can't continue to do right well enough. And so in the cosmic scales that are balancing good and bad, I mean, I'm just going to continually be on the eight ball because no matter what I try to do on the good, there's just enough bad or even one little bit of bad and it's all shaky and I don't know what to do with it. And so God just bypasses the issue and says, it will not be your righteousness balancing the scales, it will be the righteousness of Christ. So when He looks at us, He is looking not at our deeds, good and bad. He is looking in us and through us, and he has seen his Son. It's the righteousness of Christ dwelling within us. That's what's fulfilling the law, and not our efforts, and not our abilities, and not the family we come from, or the tribe we belong to, or the meticulous nature to which we can say, I have done my best. Now, we can use theological language, and we can argue whether that righteousness is imputed or infused or whatever. Set that aside. These are holy mysteries that I don't think make any real difference in the sense of, I know that I fail, and I fail. What am I going to do? It's going to be on the righteousness of Christ and not me. God looks at you, he sees his Son. Doesn't see the ways you screw up. Doesn't see the ways that you just can't get out of your own way. Doesn't see the ways in which you push other people out of the way to stand up a little taller yourself. He sees Jesus. The righteousness of Christ and not our own. And he gives it to us. This is that unmerited favor. This is that gracious love. Who are we to deserve that kind of righteousness, but it is granted to us out of gracious love. The righteousness of Christ, we can kind of cover ourselves with it. We can cover ourselves with it like a blanket, or we can wear it to keep us safe. We can wear it like a uniform to identify who we are, what our job is. We can wear the righteousness of Christ so that we will be reminded that when God looks at us, he sees Jesus. This is what Paul is talking about when he says, I keep on pressing, I keep on pushing, I keep on striving. I want to take hold of that heavenly reward, but I know that Christ has already done it for me. And he has taken a hold of me. So I forget what's come before. I lay it down. I set it aside. The good stuff and the bad stuff. The things that I'm proud of and the things that I'm so ashamed of, I hope nobody else knows about, and I try not to even remember. But I let them go. I set them down. I forget what is behind, and I strain. I press, and I push on towards the goal, which is a prize of Christ that he has already won. And he is holding on to us. It's grace. And it's righteousness, imputed, infused, or whatever. Whatever. This gets back to the gospel. The law is there as a blessing, and the law is there as a gift, but the law has been fulfilled perfectly, not through us who couldn't do it, but through Christ who could. And as that law has been fulfilled, he gives it to us. We don't deserve it. We can't earn it. Even when we do our best, at our best, we still fall short, and yet he grants it to us. So that when the Father sees us, he sees his Son. He sees Jesus. And we are marked as one of God's family. We are marked as living under God's roof and in his household. It is out of love. It is out of care. He's not only set the standards and the rules, he has fulfilled them for us, and he offers that righteousness to live inside of us. It is a theological point, yes. But it is a point worth repeating, because the more we say it, the more it means, and the better it gets, that when God looks at you, he sees within your heart, but he doesn't see the good and the bad. He doesn't see the triumphs and the failures. He looks in your heart and God sees Jesus. So press on. And push forward. Press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus has already taken a hold of.